Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Your Gateway to Wealth and Fulfillment podcast. I'm Andrew Kittleson, Certified Exit Planning Advisor with UBS in Charlotte, North Carolina. We can be reached at 704-362-8260. And today we've got James Jack, who's the head of UBS's business owner segment. We're going to talk about the different resources and how we can support business owners. So, James, excited to have you here, especially since all you've been through recently in your personal life. We talk a lot about planning for business owners, and you were hit by the proverbial bus. We're very fortunate to have you back here and supporting us. So welcome back, and tell us a little bit about your journey, you personally, and then lead into what you do at the firm.
Well, thank you, Andrew. And I'd say a little bit more than proverbial in my instance, but no, I'm very grateful and appreciative to be on the show with you. And it was great seeing you just a few weeks ago down in Charlotte. I really enjoyed spending some time with you. Absolutely. So a little bit about me, just to get us going. I've been with UBS for 20 years. I formed and have been leading the UBS Business Owner client segment since 2018. And really what that role is all about is helping to bring the resources of UBS to our business owner clients and the financial advisors that support them, like yourself. And while it runs the gamut from kind of business creation and growth all the way to exit, most of my attention is on exit planning. I too am a certified exit planning advisor. I try to bring a lot of thought and the resources there about how a business owner can exit their business and maximize value and maximize net proceeds, which I'm sure we'll dive into. But you mentioned a little bit about my kind of my personal journey. Absolutely. I think I talk a lot to business owners about what happens if you go outside and you're hit by the proverbial bus. And it does happen. Fortunately for me, after my accident, I spent many months kind of in a hospital and in a wheelchair, but now I'm walking, I'm moving, and you really wouldn't even know anything happened, which is really great. There's some, obviously some lingering effects, but I think the important lesson that I try to bring to clients that I speak to is if you're a business owner, if you're really anyone, but if you're a business owner in particular, there's a lot of lives that you're responsible for, your family, your children, your spouse, also your employees and your community. And so you really want to be thoughtful. You want to be intentional. You should be thinking about if something, God forbid, were to happen, that your life's work doesn't go down the toilet. There's so many instances where something happens in exit planning parlance. We call them the five Ds, like death, disability, divorce, distress, disagreement, some of those things, where a business is then sold as a fire sale. And all of that great goodwill that's been built in that business, you know, is sold so quickly and you don't really get the value of it. So I'm a big proponent of let's not have that happen. And let's really succeed in monetizing our life's work. So that's a little bit about me and what I do. And I'm so appreciative to be on the show.
Well, great. Again, love having you. Planning is so important, and often business owners are wearing many hats in their business, right? The more hats they can take off and find the support to run those areas of the business, the more saleable and attractive that business is. To me, exit planning is just good business planning, and it may be difficult, but you need to really find the time, carve out the time to do that proper planning. I know Pricewaterhouse did a study years ago. I forget exactly what the number was, but the majority of owners are dissatisfied after the sale of their business. So talk a little bit about when, if you are thinking about an exit, what would be optimal in terms of timing? When do you really start getting the business ready and doing the planning before the exit?
Yeah, Andrew, I think that study is there's a lot of regret from some business owners. And I'm hopeful that in the last decade or so that has passed since that original survey, I hope that number has come down, because exit planning as an industry, as something that's in the thought process of both advisors and business owners alike, has dramatically increased. So hopefully those numbers have come down. Certainly, I think with UBS, I know with the advisors like you who are really focused on it, I feel pretty good that they've come down, but obviously no science behind that. But I think from a planning standpoint, A lot of business owners of all site types, they'll call you and they'll say, Andrew, I'm selling my business in 60 days. We're closing. I had a great offer. We're taking it. What do I do to pay little taxes or to do X or to do Y? And I think your answer would be to me, unfortunately, there's probably not much since we don't have that much time. So for us, it's about getting in front of things and doing in advance. I don't think there's a specific timeline per se, but it should be months, not weeks, and maybe even ideally years. I think to your point about it being good business planning, if you're going through and thinking about exit planning, you are wanting to build a company that's transferable. You want to build a company that has great revenues, great intangibles, and that means setting up the company so that you're earning strong revenues and you're earning strong profitability, but you also have great policies and procedures in place that are documented. You have a fairly broad revenue customer base. You're not reliant on one or two customers. And the business is not reliant on you as the owner. You have great staff, you have great management so that you can exit this business and it can still grow. Those are all the great recipe for success in terms of driving great value for your business. I think from our side, Andrew, it comes more into some of the pre-tax planning, the investment planning, the financial planning, and potentially connecting with an investment bank. And I know we'll dive deeper in some of those, but in essence, if you want to reduce your tax burden, you're going to do that through charitable planning, gift and estate tax planning, maybe some other tax planning like taking advantage of qualified small business stock. You really need to know and be thoughtful about those types of things and intentional so that you can really drive to what you want to achieve and help reduce your burden. I think when a lot of people think about planning, their eyes glaze over and they say, oh, it's just about being organized. Yeah, it is about being organized, but for a business owner, it can really be significant dollars in tax savings or in driving more to the causes you care about with your charitable planning. So there's a lot at stake from the planning standpoint. And then from the valuation standpoint, you know, hiring a proper plan, a proper advisor, like an investment banker to help you go through that sale process is really critical because they're going to create competitive tension. They're going to help drive multiple bidders to the table. A lot of times I hear from a business owner and says, hey, someone called me, they made an amazing offer, I'm going to take it. And that's just one bid. They're trying to get for as little as possible. So let's bring in a proper investment banker who knows how to market this, knows your strengths and weaknesses, knows the industry, knows who else is interested in buying this business potentially, so that they can drive better terms for you. That could be more money, could be more cash up front, it could mean better rollover equity maybe, or better terms in general. So those things could all make a difference, plus other things that drive value. Maybe you want your top employees to be taken care of, or you want your son or daughter to continue to lead the business with a minority stake, or you want the factory to stay in town for a few years. Those are all things that mean something and mean value. And with a proper advisor, you can drive that. So that's a lot going on there. So just doing it on your own, once somebody calls you willy-nilly, that's really tough. So you want to be thoughtful. You want to be intentional. So I like to say at least a year, but ideally a little bit longer, because you can execute and be thoughtful and drive some of those things. And not only is that timeline important, but on the planning in particular, if you want to take advantage of some of those tax savings, you really do need a separation of when you execute some of those things and when you sign a letter of intent, because that's kind of a red line for the IRS.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the process. And I certainly would agree. I just ran into somebody a couple of weeks ago who was referred to us by another client who had just received an LOI from a private equity firm. And we're sitting down and talking to her as the business owner, and the process has begun, trying to support her by bringing in an investment banker that's in our network that she's not engaging, but at least can help her with the LOI and start thinking about how to put this transaction together. But you're right. And often it's, hey, this, my friend sold their business to in a similar industry to this private equity firm. They just made me an offer. Private equity firms love that when there's no competition. And, you know, there could be a buyer outside of the normal buyer list you may be thinking about as an owner. I equate it to selling a home. You probably are not going to sell your home to the first person that comes by and knocks on your door and gives you an offer. So it's an arduous process going through it. But if you do the proper planning up front, hire the right banker with the appropriate experience, get the right M&A attorney, that helps you take more control of the process as opposed to the private equity firm having all the control. And you talked a little bit about the things that help drive value, like having the processes in place, documented, certainly having the right financial statements as well. Often in the space we're dealing with, if you're talking about the lower middle market, you might have the owner that is the majority of the sales arm, and that's a big role that needs to be, the owner needs to divest themselves of. And sometimes that's difficult because they feel like they're the best salesperson for the organization. But the more you can kind of hand the keys over to a buyer and it's not relying on the business owner, it just drives the value of the company. Shifting gears a little bit, there's been a lot of changes, right? Whether it's higher interest rates compared to a few years ago, now we're dealing with tariffs. There's always something changing in the market, and with higher rates, that usually leads to fewer transactions. Where are we right now in the cycle? Rates haven't moved much. What are we seeing out there today?
Yeah, Andrew. I mean, there's been a lot that's gone on, and maybe just commenting before I get into this question on your last point. While it's similar to selling a house, I think the difference is that when you sell a house, hopefully the house still remains in good standing while you're going through the process. When you're selling a business, if you take your eye off the ball, right, because you're doing planning or you're doing this or that, and then the revenue starts to slip, well, then that can immediately impact the sale of your business and what you get out of it. So when you're in the process, when you're in the trenches, you really need to be focused. And that further supports why you want to do a lot of the planning, at least some of the core parts of it, well before you even begin a process, so it doesn't distract you. Now, in terms of where we are in the market, you're absolutely correct. It's been a wild ride these last few years. I think everyone came into this year, 2025, with a lot of high hopes about the M&A market. We saw in 2024, the first year-over-year increase in middle market M&A since 2021. And so people were, I think, excited that we finally kind of moved past some of the slowness that we've seen. I would say in general, the values that have transacted, while less than 2024 in the beginning of the year, they're still kind of around what they've been the last few years. So it's not like things have dropped off a cliff. I wouldn't be so gloom and doom. I think people are just being thoughtful and wanting to see a little bit about what's going on with the tariffs. And I think since, let's say, Liberation Day, I think we do have a bit more certainty of where tariffs will likely land, probably between 10 and 30%. And that we base that, our CIO bases that off of 10% for the UK, who is a great ally of ours, and 30% for China, well, is maybe more of the frenemy side of things. So that's likely where things will stand. And obviously that is a cost that businesses will take or either push on to their customers. So I think people have a better sense now of where things will likely fall. We'll get a better sense in the coming weeks because the original 90-day extension will come up in July, although it's certainly possible that can be extended again. You also have the One Big Beautiful Bill that should be signed in July too, which I think there's a lot of tax things that will be beneficial to business owners, both from the business side and the business owner side, particularly codifying the $15 million gift and estate tax exemption, making that more permanent. That is really, really helpful for business owners as they plan an exit. And we kind of hinted at some of that in the past. And then rates. I think there is this battle between the president and the Fed about where rates should be. The Fed is kind of keeping rates steady. The president wants rates to come down. If rates come down, that will help incentivize transactions because private equity in particular, they use a lot of leverage to help further drive their buying power. So I think those are some of the things that are circulating around it. Here's my take on M&A in general. Back in 2020, when M&A came to a grinding halt with COVID. Everyone, you know, wasn't doing anything. And then suddenly at the end of 2020, things dramatically changed and we had a gangbuster year in 2021. Everyone was transacting. If you were breathing, basically, you could transact. And I would say the people that were able to succeed and sell quickly at the height of all of that were the people who were well prepared in advance. They were the people who had started a process and continued on that process during the pause. And so I'd say right now, even if you're not necessarily selling the business or getting into a sale process right now, if you're thinking of wanting to exit in 1 or 2 years, I would definitely encourage you to be doing the planning and be speaking with an investment banker to get yourself situated in the best possible way. That's kind of number one. So it can change on a dime is an important outtake from all that. I think the other thing about why I'm fairly optimistic about the M&A market is because private equity in particular, but also many of the strategic companies, they have large amounts of cash just waiting to be deployed. And private equity needs to deploy that cash. And if they don't, they then ultimately need to return it to their investors after a certain period of time. And if you look at private equity's dry powder, which is what we call that cash that they've raised, it is really aging. And now a good chunk of it is 4 or 5 years old. That's kind of teetering towards the latest that they can really hold that before they need to return it. And that means that if they have fewer assets under management, that means they get paid less. And so maybe it's a dim view of humanity, Andrew, but I've yet to meet a private equity person who wants to be paid less. So I think they'll deploy that raised funds for good companies. I don't think they're going to do it willy-nilly and be irresponsible, don't get me wrong, but they will find companies that they've been waiting to and they will ultimately make those transactions. So I think we'll get some certainty on tariffs. We'll get some better certainty on the One Big Beautiful Bill probably in the next few weeks. And then I think when will rates begin to move? There's different views on it. I'm not an economist, but it's likely at some point they will come down. And that may be the catalyst to make transactions move. And if you want to be kind of ready to go and be at the top of that, you want to be ready now. You want to be preparing now.
Yeah. So if you are a best in class within your industry, and that all that dry powder you speak of just lends itself to the competitive tension you talked about earlier, getting these firms to compete for your business as an owner. All right. So we've talked a lot about exit planning and helping an owner transition, and which is it's a big transition going from owner to investor. And replacing, figuring out, you know, what you need after taxes from a cash flow standpoint to support your lifestyle. We help with all of that planning, but let's kind of rewind and go back into the life cycle of a business. We're not just helping folks with exit planning, but if they're looking to grow, if they've got an established business, they're wanting to borrow money or go into the capital markets and raise funds to go do an acquisition. Maybe it's a minority recap. Could you just talk a little bit about how we support owners in that part of the life cycle?
Absolutely. So for us, we have our investment bank, which does, I'd say, significant lending, maybe above $25 million or something like that. But what about smaller lending? There's a lot of business owners who maybe need $1 million or $2 million to help with a small bolt-on acquisition, or maybe it's an internal transfer of a sale. It's a son or daughter wants to buy mom or dad out. There's a lot of lending there. And we've partnered with different referral lenders, ones like Newtek, for example, and there are several others on our platform to help facilitate that. I think the key thing, though, is you don't just need a traditional line of credit from a bank or a commercial bank, which obviously those are quite helpful. But I think in the current environment, particularly for business loans, they tend to be pretty expensive. So some people are looking at like Small Business Administration or SBA loans, which I mentioned our partner Newtek that helps on that, or some other types of kind of non-bank lender things. So a lot of business owners are using those to help execute on some of their needs, particularly, I think you mentioned, on kind of growth capital. So, and the key part of that, Andrew, is if you're a business that has an EBITDA of, $2 million, let's say, If you can get that from $2 to $2.5 or $2 or $3 million with an acquisition, and that's just one sort of example of it, but basically that should help the potential future multiple of an exit. If your multiple is 5, you know, by going up $1 million of EBITDA, that's another $5 million of exit growth, number one. But also, if by going up $1 million in EBITDA, maybe your multiple goes from 5 to 5.5 or 6, well, then you really added exponential kind of growth there for the value of your business. So I think a lot of business owners think about, you know, even if their exit might be 10 years down the line or longer, maybe I can grow this business in some way organically or inorganically, and they're using capital resources to help them facilitate that.
Okay, great. What are some of the questions an owner should be thinking about or asking when they're going through the process of looking at an investment bank, an M&A advisor, trying to find the right fit? What would be a few kind of top questions an owner should be asking any investment banker?
First, asking yourself some questions so that you can really pose everything out and be thoughtful and intentional in what you want. So what I mean by that is, what are you looking to do? Are you looking to stay on in the company and be a consultant? Or are you looking to continue to have a portion of the company and for rollover equity? Think about where you want to be with a potential exit so you can lay that out. So ask yourself a little bit about what's your vision for when you're on the other side of that transaction. Number one, I think. Number two is, I think when you're speaking to an investment banker, is ask what other kind of trades that they've done. Where, what have they done in your industry? Have they done anything similar or recently seen a similar transaction? Because that will help you if they know other potential buyers kind of off the bat. I'd ask them that. I'd ask them for what are your strengths and weaknesses as the company. Try to get some of those things so that you can potentially work on them. What are things that can be worked on in the near term? Rather than, okay, we can't move through that. And then I would ask a little bit about questions that just make you want to know that person. I think when you're hiring an advisor, particularly an investment banker who you're going to be in the trenches with for, I don't know, 6 to 12 months, I like to call it the airplane test. Who could you sit next to on a long international flight that you're not going to want to jump off the plane, right? And so you want to find someone who's a social fit for you. And that could be the investment bankers who come in all buttoned up in suit and tie and look and really know their stuff and bring a giant team with them. Or that could be two guys who come in jeans and flannel and fit more with your type of business, right? Maybe you're more of a blue collar business that is worth a ton, right? And there's tons of that out there. So you want to find someone who is going to mesh with you, is going to do well with you and just and be thoughtful about you. So those are some of my, would be my key advice. I think maybe a different kind of outside of the business owner one, Andrew, when talking to someone like you, like a financial advisor, I would ask some questions as well. And I want to stress them. You want to really find out what you're spending and what you'll spend going forward, because sometimes your business is spending those on your behalf, like the country club or the car lease or something. So you want to make sure that they're integrated into your financial plan. So by doing the financial plan, and Andrew, you can add to this, is if someone offers you $10 million and you need to clear at least $8 million to live the lifestyle you want to live after you exit your business, maybe you can potentially do it. But if you know, you're going to like clear less than that, then, you know, you got to keep going. So it's an important first step is, what do I actually need? What's kind of my wealth gap, if you will? I would ask yourself some questions as well, which shows, I think for a business owner, the business gives three general things. It gives your time, gives your social life, and it gives your purpose. So what I mean by that, on a time standpoint, is probably how the business owner spends all their day. So what are they going to do to fill that time now? And they're going to be spending more time with their spouse, with their kids, with their grandkids, whatever it is, playing golf. What are you going to do? And then the social life, for a lot of business owners, their friends are all around that business. It's their employees, it's their customers, it's their vendors, whatever it may be, their competitors. Will those social life strengths continue once you're no longer in the business? A lot of business owners worry about that. And then on the purpose side, it's like, why do you get out of bed, right? Generally, it's to do what you're doing. And so there'll have to be something new that will fill that. And it could be fun. It could be family. It could be charity. It could be mentorship. It could be all of those things. But you really want to be thoughtful about them. And so, again, time, social life, and purpose, I would bring those concepts to someone like you, Andrew, as my financial advisor, and say, these are the things I want to do. These are some of the things I've got some trepidation about. And Andrew, you're not going to solve many of those things. But, you know, if the person's charitably inclined, oh, well, then maybe it's a conversation about how you'll give to charity, donor advised funds, whatever it may be. If it's about mentorship, maybe you can help a little bit about that. If it's, I want to spend more time with my kids and grandkids, okay, well, we're thinking about a second home in another state. And so that's a great place where everyone can come together. Well, of course, that's going to be a big part of the financial plan. So think about kind of those things when you're talking to your financial advisor, your investment banker, and all of the different advisors, your CPA, your trust and estate attorney, your M&A attorney. Exit planning is a team sport, and everybody needs to kind of be on the same page.
Yeah, very well said. I was actually going to ask about the M&A attorney because it's sometimes overlooked, but all important elements of having the right team around you to really help take control of the process with leading to an optimal exit. And when we go through our discovery with a client, we'll not only be focused on the financial component, but some of the things you've talked about. What are their interests? How do they like to spend their time? And then thinking about building life after the sale around those areas. So James, Jack, I really appreciate the conversation. You've been great. You see a lot supporting all the advisors at UBS across the country. So you're a tremendous resource to us. Thank you for all the work you do. And thanks for joining me today on this podcast. We look forward to hearing more from you in the business owner segment as we move forward in supporting our business owner clients. Thank you so much.
Andrew, thank you for having me and thank you for what you do. I mean, I know you do a lot on the exit planning side, which we just talked about, but you know, I think some of the other stuff that you do, I just saw you had a thing about AI as a podcast or something like that. You're really helping business owners think strategically about themselves personally and their business. And so they're lucky to have you. So thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate it. Like you said, it's a team sport. So let's go out and support these owners. Thanks.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.